Hello and welcome to Ag PhD Radio. I'm Darren Hefty.
And I'm Brian Hefty. Thanks for joining us today. We've got a great show for you. We're going to talk a little about plant tissue analysis. If you've got any questions for us, just give us a call here, 844-44-AG-PHD. That's 844-442-4743. You can email us, radio@agphd.com, or find us on Twitter, AgPhD Media, Darren Hefty, or Brian Hefty. We are live in the Morton studio today, and we will get to our discussion, plant tissue analysis. We think it's super important for every farmer to at least be doing a little bit of this, regardless of what crop you're raising. So we'll talk about that all throughout the show today. Let's go to the phone lines to get things started here. We've got Aaron calling in from Iowa. Aaron, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good. How are you, Brian?
Excellent. So I hear you got some questions on fungicides.
Yes, we're getting ready to roll maybe on Saturday morning here in northeast Iowa, and I'm putting some 9% chelated zinc in furrow with insecticide, and I was wondering about putting fungicide, if I can just use any fungicide in furrow, if I need something, since I'm not putting like a pop-up or starter necessarily on, if I could just put some regular headline or anything right in furrow there, or if I needed to get the more expensive products that mix with fertilizer.
Yeah, there's nothing that you can put directly in with either fertilizer or insecticide. Neither is going to work. So what you'd have to do, if you wanted to do that, the only thing that will work that I can think of, and Darren, correct me if I'm wrong here, is Temetree LFR. That's basically headline plus capture LFR, and that combination will mix in fertilizer. So that would be one option.
I'd still jar test just to make sure. And sure, if you could keep it inside where it's halfway warm, that'd be wonderful. But yep, that's what I would do. I'd go to Temetree LFR. That way you've got the fungicide and insecticide in a form that's going
to
mix.
Otherwise, you got 2 days, so you could always add another system to your planter.
Yeah.
So if you want to do that, I mean, there are a lot of people that have done that, and then they are able to run the fungicide totally separate from everything else they're doing, and that works okay. But yes, we have plenty of experience with this, and all I can tell you is everything stinks. There's nothing that mixes well, so you've either got to go to Temetree or you got to go to a completely separate system.
Okay, very good.
Sorry. I know that wasn't the answer you wanted, but...
No, that's all right.
All right. Well, hey, thanks for the call, Aaron.
Yep, have a good day.
You bet. Yeah, where Aaron's question's coming from, too, is when we start talking about planting early, so he's in northeast Iowa, the temperatures over there, I assume, have been similar to ours, which are really, really cold, below freezing every night for the last few nights. And if he's going to plant on Saturday, that means we've got cold soil, which most likely has moisture in it. And I have no problem planting in that, as long as the soil's fit, of course, because we're past the first crop insurance date. But what we have found with our research is when we use fungicide early, it does pay on corn. Now, we haven't found this to be true in soybeans. We haven't found this to be true on later planted corn. But we have, at least in our case, in our research in multi-state, we have found that early fungicide does pay. So I know it's something we're doing in our farm with the early planting, not the late planting, but the early planting. And so a lot of people come to this conclusion of, well, wait a second, you want us to do all this extra stuff with the early planting, insecticide, pop-up fertilizer, fungicide, great seed treatment, where's the money? Am I going to have any money left at the end of the season? Well, look, if you want to wait and plant when the soil's warm, then I'm less concerned about a lot of these things. But when you're going to plant early, and that's typically where we have better yields, then I would really encourage you to do some other things to protect that seed and help it pop out of the ground faster. It will make a difference for you. And I'll just give you one quick example from 6 years ago. This is the first time that we had a lot of these really high yield farmers with plots that they were managing on our farm at the Ag PhD Field Day site. I think we had 7 super high yield guys, plus Darren, plus me. So we had a whole bunch of these corn plots out there. And anyway, those guys were all debating about what's the right soil temperature. Let's plant when we got 56 or 57 degree soil temps. So our research lead, Glenn, and I gave him a hard time about this. I'm like, Glenn, this isn't going to work. And he goes, well, this is what the guys want to do. We had to wait till the soil was 56, 57 degrees. Well, it was May 23rd. The whole field right behind our Ag PhD field day site, we planted April 23rd. And the whole field, on average, beat every single one of the high yield plots that year. You can't plant late if you want high yields in just about any crop. Now, I'm not going to say it never works, but you can look at all the university information that's been out there for years and years and years, and you can see early planting is where you typically will get the best yields. So if you want to have the best success with early planting, you got to find seed that germinates well when it's cold. You have to have a little extra seed treatment typically, and some pop-up fertilizer, fungicide, and insecticide absolutely help. So you do whatever you want to do, but all I'm telling you is if you want to plant early, that's my best advice as an agronomist with lots of years of experience planting into cold soils. I was just telling some people the other day, this is my 30th year as an agronomist. And, you know, after 30 years, we've made plenty of mistakes. I've made plenty of mistakes. So I learned from a lot of those mistakes. And I could just tell you, if you want to go out there without doing a whole bunch of extra stuff, go ahead. I just know that there's no way I'm doing that anymore on our own farm, because I would like to have a great stand instead of having a mediocre stand. Because typically when you have a mediocre stand, that means you have a mediocre yield. We can't afford to have mediocre yields with the prices that we have today for commodities.
We're going to talk about plant tissue analysis on our show today, and I just think about all these things you're talking about here, and I know Aaron had mentioned he's putting some zinc on as well. One of the things I like to do is do some treated versus untreated checks. Maybe it's one little strip. Maybe it's just, hey, I accidentally turned around and I forgot to flip the switch to put the starter back on. I would do some plant tissue analysis right in those spots and see, all right, here's where I put product on versus where I didn't. Did it actually make it into the plant? Did it make a difference? And of course, I'd be really curious to see how performance is later on in the season if I'm getting some yield that would justify some of the expense. Like you mentioned, some other expenses you may consider at planting as well. We're taking your calls and questions throughout today's program as well at 844-44-AG-PHD. We'll be right back.
Your grain bin fans can cost you a lot. High electric bills from running when conditions are not ideal, shrinkage from overdried grain, and spoiled grain all take money out of your pocket. With the Steps GMS app temperature humidity switch, get your bin fans to start making you money. Only run vans when the conditions are right. Eliminate shrink and spoilage in your bins. Deliver grain in top condition at market moisture. When every dollar counts, you need Steps GMS. Contact us today at stepsgms.com.
Your land is a legacy, a challenge from those who tended it before you, to build on their foundations. At Corteva Agriscience, we understand what it means to be the stewards of a legacy. We embrace the challenge of building on the foundation of Dow AgroSciences to maintain your trust, to bring new solutions, to help you care for your land. See how we can help build your legacy at rangeandpasture.com.
Success isn't just about maintaining your operation, how you make out for the season, or how much you can get from each acre. It's about doing precisely what needs to be done to feed your crop and grow your legacy, all the way down to the last drop. AgroLiquid Precision Crop Nutrition. Apply less, expect more. Find a retailer at agroliquid.com.
Ideal for herbicide applications, the Ultra Low Drifts Large Air Inducted Droplets were designed to eliminate driftable fines without sacrificing coverage. Its thick three-dimensional pattern creates multiple angles for the spray to cover the target. Hypro, helping you spray better.
How much yield did you lose the moment you planted your seed? Introducing the Germinator Closing Wheel from Farm Shop MFG. Designed and built by a farmer tired of seeing yield loss from poor stands, the Germinator gives your crop the strong start it needs for maximum yield. Visit farmshopmfg.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. We're broadcasting from the Morton studio today. We're going to talk about plant tissue analysis. We're also taking your calls and questions. This is certainly a very busy time of season for many farmers, whether it's planting, it's field prep, and all those decisions that go into getting that crop in the ground and cared for. And of course, we've got crops that are up to that farmers are trying to manage. If you find yourself in one of those situations and you've got an agronomic question, our phone lines are open at 844-44-AG-PHD. Let's talk to Glenn next. He's in Montana. Glenn, how are you today?
I'm doing okay. Thanks for taking my call, guys. Got a little question on some winter wheat I planted last fall that I had to till the field, and usually don't do any tillage, but so the field's a little rough, so I had to smooth it up a little bit, and then it germinated last fall and went dormant to get a little seed root on it, and then through the winter we had about a week, some almost 50-mile-an-hour winds every day that took most of the topsoil off on me. In the spring, I went out there, and you could see all my furrows there, all the seed. It was nicely run out there on top of the ground, and it had a little seed root that's holding it in the ground, on top of the ground. And I got a few plants starting to green up and come, but is that seed going to be viable for the rest of the season, or is it just going to germinate and then die this spring?
That is the million-dollar question, isn't it, Glenn? I don't know that.
It is.
Yeah, I don't know that we're going to have any perfect answer for you. It just depends on what. So what you describe to us, how consistent that is across every field, because what I typically find, you talk about the wind erosion thing. We're very, very familiar with that. We are also in a pretty windy state, maybe not quite as windy as you, but close. So we've had to deal with those kind of things before, and what we find is it's very uneven across fields. And so we might have some spots that it got so exposed, and maybe even the plants got damaged at that point, some froze off, I mean, all kinds of issues. And so in spots in the field, it won't be great. And then in other spots, you're going to find, oh, I actually have a fairly decent stand right here. Unfortunately,
right.
Go ahead.
I'm seeing that. I'm sorry. Spots I'm seeing, you know, the rows are starting to green up, and you see drill rows, and then there's a large majority of the field that you can see the seed across the field, but there's nothing coming yet.
Yeah.
Or there's even a few that are green and then they turn brown, or we've had some cold nights here lately that like a frost damage to it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a tough situation because basically you have two choices right now. You can either let it sit right now, or you can do something to basically kill it off and then go in and reseed. But if you reseed, I'm going to assume you'd put spring wheat in where you had winter wheat, right?
That's what I'm thinking. But then I talked to one guy and he suggested to put a forage crop in on top of it just so a little bit winter wheat did come through to survive, that it just take and hay it and then feed it to the cows.
Yep. I mean, you could certainly do something like that as well. Honestly, if it was me, I'd give it a little more time. We've been in a similar situation several times before, not just with fall seeded crops, but spring seeded crops too. And you go, I don't know. It's the odds are against it. And every once in a while you go, you know, it really didn't turn out too bad. So I just wait and let it sit for a little bit. But let me ask you one more question. When would you normally plant spring wheat right in your area? Right now? A week or two?
Right now, or if the ground is too wet right now. But if conditions are right, we'd already have it in the ground.
Yeah. Yep. So where I'm going with this is you probably have a little bit of time. I mean, not a tremendous amount of time, but another week or two.
There's no way to 100% kill that crop off, Brian. If there's still seed germinating and coming.
That's where I was going when I said, well, what are you going to put back in there? You're probably going to put spring wheat in. Well, there's no way to kill winter wheat out of spring wheat. So then you're stuck with, hey, I'm now going to have to do more tillage, or I'm going to have to wait for it to come anyway, spray it off with Roundup, then go in and seed a day or two later. So, I mean, there's just no real great option here. And that's why, because there's no great option, I would say just give it a little bit more time. You're not completely up against the wall. If you get everything else done that you can on your farm, then hopefully here in a week or two, it becomes more evident for you. And that's usually what I like. I want to see either, hey, most of it died, or most of it lived. It's those in-between things. Those are always the tough ones, and I'm sure that's the reason why you called, because right now you're going, yeah, it could go either way on me. My assumption here is it's going to make it, and I'm probably going to leave it, but I just continue to monitor it for next week or two, and then you got to pull the trigger probably before May 1, one way or the other, I would assume.
Yes, definitely. By May 1st, I have to have a make a decision on that. So.
Yep.
All right.
All right.
Well, appreciate it, guys.
Yep. Hang in there. Good luck.
All right. Thanks. Talk to you
yep.
later.
Thanks.
Let's head back to the phone lines. Got Marcus McClure with us right now. He's with Agro Liquid. Marcus, how are you today?
Good. How are you guys doing?
Good. You never get any of those challenges, do you, where, man, my crop doesn't look the greatest. Do I tough it out and hope for the best, or do I just call a spade and wipe it out right now?
well, I'm actually the I'm Agro Liquid's permanent crop specialist, so I deal with a few different challenges than what you guys deal with. So,
well, speak about that. Now, when we're talking about nut trees and citrus and these kinds of things, we talk about plant tissue analysis a lot for annual crops, corn and soybeans and wheat and others. How about with those permanent crops? Do you still do plant tissue analysis, and what are you looking for?
Yeah, absolutely. So typically we will take two plant tissue analysis samples every year, one in the spring and then one in the fall. And so I just got done taking a bunch of samples in almonds out here. And so and what we're looking for is basically we're looking at where all of our macro levels are at, so N, P, and K, our secondaries, and then really this is the time that we're going to start really focusing on our micronutrients and seeing where we can save money, and then also what we need to do to hit those yields that growers are going after.
You know, on the annual crops, a lot of times if we see something show up on those tissue tests, we're probably too late to fix some of it, depending on what it is, of course, and how bad it is. But we're oftentimes gearing our soil applied program and our planting time program to make that change. With the permanent crops, you've got an opportunity to do some foliar feeding or push some more nutrition out. How would a guy do it? Say you're running short on zinc or copper or some of these micros. How would you deliver those for a permanent crop to make a difference for this year's crop?
Yeah, for sure. So typically in a permanent crop setting, a grower is going to go through the field with a ground rig anywhere from six to ten times a year, depending on different disease pressure and pest pressure out there. And so we just throw something in the tank. You get a free ride out there. You're already going through the field. So we'll use the plant tissue analysis for us to make a decision on where we should go micronutrient wise and all that.
You know, you make a comment there that you get a free ride out there with some of these other apps. I think this is one of the great things that a lot of farmers are missing from time to time, that, oh, I'm going out there to spray for weeds. Well, hey, what else could I be doing at the same time? I'm already driving across the field. It's not going to take me any more time, and it's not going to cost me any extra money other than what the product is. And you're right. In a case of a micronutrient like this, you may only spend a few bucks and you may get a big return.
For sure. And especially when you start dealing with guys that that are really pushing yields, 4,000 acres on almonds, things like that, then all these micronutrients, they really make a big difference as to if we can hit those yield goals or not.
When you think about these permanent crops, what kind of winter did they have this year, and what's the season shaping out to be?
Yeah, it was a warm, mild winter for us out here. I believe we only got two nights of frost, which we typically get somewhere in that 7 to 10 nights. But the big thing for us was we didn't get the rain this winter that we were hoping for and needing. And so, we had a couple pretty wet weeks there to start off December. And then it just dried up. And we didn't get anything until a few weeks ago. We started getting some rain, and so came at all the wrong time.
It sounds just like our crop farming, too. We just can't buy that rain when we really need it. Marcus McClure with Agro, thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Hey, Bill. Any advice to control tough weeds and rootworms?
That's easy, Jim. Buy two, save three.
Wait, for weeds and rootworms?
Buy two, save three. Combine your Impact or new Impact Z herbicide purchase with a qualifying insecticide and save $3 per acre.
Buy two, save three. That is good advice.
For details, go to buy2save3.com. Impact, Impact Z, and Buy 2 Save 3 are trademarks owned by Amvac Chemical Corporation. All rights reserved. Impact Z is a restricted-use pesticide. Always read and follow label instructions.
Find your full potential and increase your bottom line with branded generic herbicides from Atticus LLC. Tough broadleaf weeds are a hassle, but they're no match for Cavallo from Atticus. Cavallo delivers fast, contact, and residual control so your corn, soybean, and sorghum crops can thrive. Growers across the region count on Atticus for relevant and reliable products that deliver results every time. Ask your local retailer about Atticus products and visit AticusLLC.com to learn more. For value-based solutions you can trust, turn to Atticus. Always read and follow label instructions.
Challenging field conditions often make harvest difficult. Can your corn head handle it? The GTS X10 corn head from Agra US is a rugged, cost-effective alternative to heavier, more traditional heads. Constructed of durable yet lightweight aluminum, the X10 puts less strain on your combine without losing harvest effectiveness. And it is 40% lighter than traditional heads, reducing field compaction in those less than ideal conditions. For more information, give us a call at 833-4-AGRA-US.
This is a seed bag. This bag is made of craft paper with a cellophane liner and provides nothing for seed growth. This is a seed bed. It was prepared with Case IH soil management tools. It optimizes everything from nutrient access to water infiltration to create the perfect environment for early uniform emergence. Get to know why your seed bed drives productivity at caseih.com/soil management.
Before it's too late and white mold becomes a problem, you need to ask your seed dealer for heads-up seed treatment. When raising soybeans in the Midwest, you know the risk of being caught unprepared. As heard on AgPhD, there are several steps you can take prior to planting for a successful management plan against white mold. Compatible and cost-effective season-long protection starts now by asking your seed dealer to apply heads-up to your 2020 bean seed order. For more information, visit headsupst.com.
You're all set with the 4x4 turbo diesel truck. How about some options? Spray and bed liner?
Absolutely.
Tailgate step and Nerf bars?
Gotta have them.
Tie down hooks and stainless steel toolbox?
You know it.
Tinted windows?
Of course.
Options are good. That's as true in the field as it is with your pickup. In addition to taking care of tough weeds, new Open Sky herbicide gives you more rotational choices than ever before and an easy-to-handle formulation.
Gooseneck tow package?
Yep.
Discover more Open Sky details at openskyherbicide.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio. Today we're talking plant tissue analysis. This doesn't just correlate to corn management. You can certainly use plant tissue analysis to look at nutrient content of just about any kind of plant out there. We've got Ron Meyer with us right now with Colorado State University. Ron, thanks for joining us today.
Hey, good afternoon. Good to be with you.
There's certainly a lot of different crops raised in Colorado and a lot of really good growers getting tremendous yield and productivity. Do you see plant tissue analysis being a part of the program for many different crops?
We are, yeah, and it's being used more and more. And, you know, as that fertilizer bill gets bigger for some folks, why that tissue testing is just becoming a strategy that more and more folks are.
You're kind of speaking my language there, Ron. Expensive fertilizer, yes, that's exactly how I look at it on our farm. Man, we're spending a lot of money on fertilizer. It's not cheap. We want to make sure we're doing the right things and getting the best bang for the buck. What are you hearing with this, and what are you seeing from some of these plant tissue analysis? Are you seeing micronutrients being a big part of this? Is it more around the macros? Where are guys focusing?
You know, we test for everything, so macros and micros. But for the most part, you know, if that plant is lacking one of the macros, you're going to see it. So if it's nitrogen deficient, it's going to look yellow to you. You can't tell if there's a micronutrient missing. And so testing is really one of the few ways that really gives you a good snapshot of what's going on out there. So anymore, you know, we test for macros. macros and micros, but the micronutrient test is the one that's telling us some very good information about what's going on.
You know, we were talking with Marcus McClure, who works out in California with a lot of the permanent crops, and he had mentioned that if we see nutrients that are short, we oftentimes get a free ride with other applications that we're making. Do you see farmers in your state putting fertility out with irrigation on some of those acres? Is that one spot where they may target it?
Yeah, so we have a lot of center pivot irrigation in Colorado, and yes, putting fertilizer out with the water is a very good strategy. It saves an application cost, and you spoon feed that nutrient throughout the season as the crop needs it.
Going into this spring, are there areas of concern that you have for growers around nutrition or other things that are happening out in the fields?
Well, yeah, so we have a lot of winter wheat out here, and it is broken dormancy now, so it's greening up, and I do see some issues, especially on our hilltops, with some of our wheat fields. And so, you know, just looking at it, it's hard to know which nutrient is limiting, and so really a test is the only way to find that out. But yeah, there's some spots out here in Colorado that are showing some sick wheat, and just not quite sure which nutrient is causing that.
Yeah, it's like you say, it's tough to pick some of these things out. Many of these, like you talked about the micronutrient deficiencies, a lot of times they look pretty similar from one to the next.
Yeah, it's very difficult to tell a zinc deficiency from an iron deficiency and whatnot. And so that's so true. You know, with the macros, you can kind of guess. You can see the differences out there, and you get a feel for what's limiting. With the micros, that's not so easy. And so really a test is the only way to really hone it down and find out just exactly what's ailing the field.
Been talking with Ron Meyer with Colorado State University. Ron, thank you so much. Really appreciate your time, and good luck. You're heading into the spring.
Hey, thanks. Good to be with you again.
You bet. We've got Joe Sisko with us with Midwest Labs over in Nebraska. Joe, how are you today?
Oh, good. Good. Talking, thank you, Darren.
We're talking plant tissue analysis, and it won't be long, and you'll have some crop growing out in a lot of these fields. And we were just talking with Ron Meyer. He said in Colorado, the wheat's broken dormancy, so we're starting to see some growers pulling tissue samples there. When do you start seeing things really heat up for you in Nebraska?
We'll start seeing the wheat, like you just said, tissue samples coming in off the wheat after it breaks dormancy. As far as corn, soybean, I'm planting some right now. I was out last night doing some soil health soil sampling, and I'll be back in June, maybe late May when that corn is in the V6 stage, I'm planning on doing a little project of my own. It's going to be matched up with Midwest Labs. Shared Insights program that we're launching this year, and that's in a more intensive program. It's going to be a 12-week tissue sampling program for corn and soybeans, and we're going to track the week-to-week progress of the crop, and then we're going to compare that with that soil sample that we have for those specific acres, and then we can track that progress, and if it's on a higher yielding environment, we're going to want it at the high side of that optimum level. If it's a moderate production, you know, we're going to be happy with it being the tissue analysis coming back in that mid-range.
Sure.
We're getting ready for it.
Yeah, we do hear a lot about this. I know many of the high-yield growers that have been speaking at our field day, and we see them at Commodity Classic and other places have talked about this. And Brian and I have been talking about this for a long time, too, with our own farm, that we're pulling soil tests, we're getting yield monitor data, and, man, it's awesome to have some plant tissue analysis along the way to help explain, okay, here's maybe why we ran short in this part of the field, or here's why our yields weren't as good, so we can focus on what we got to fix for next year. In fact, we're out there today getting some fertilizer inputs on, trying to meet any potential shortcomings. And as Brian might say, well, just no, I'm not just worried about that. I'm worried about getting 300 plus bushel corn. So we got to have a little extra out there to make sure we do that. What are you shooting for, Joe? What is there an issue that you're trying to address in your project, or is it just a matter of getting growers to understand how soil tests correlate with those tissue tests?
My project is for 200 bushel corn or 28 to 30 ton per acre silage. It's a silage grower that I'm
excellent
that I'm working with. And so many retailers are working with their growers on, okay, we're gonna make this investment now, even though corn is $3 or less, but what's it doing in season? So they've made that investment, and so now they're gonna validate, okay, I put that extra on for boron, or I put that extra on for sulfur. So in season, what is it doing for me? And yes, we're striving for those higher tons and those higher bushels, but we're also just trying to make sure that that year-to-year investment that we're doing is coming through into the crop.
Oh, I like
getting
that.
A more robust crop.
Yeah, return on investment focus is definitely the way to go. And I like that you mentioned you're focused on some silage in this particular project that you're working on, because we're doing some of the same work. We've got a neighboring dairy farm that they're really interested in what that nutrition is, not just, hey, I need this many tons, but I also need as much nutrition per ton as I can get. And this is a great way to go about looking at that. Talking with Joe Sisco with Midwest Labs. Joe, thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on today, and good luck this spring.
Thank you. Have a good week.
You know, Brian, this is something we've been doing for a while, too, is pulling tests each week during the growing season with plant tissue analysis. That's one of the reasons we wanted to talk about it today. We get so many farmers that are saying, well, I pulled a plant tissue test and it told me one thing, but we're not so interested in, well, what was that one moment in time? We're more interested in what's the trend over the year.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's usually why we're going to tell people tissue test every week. Now, I realize that sounds like this big job. But what I'd rather have you do is, rather than going out taking tissue tests in 10 different spots only one day a year, just take tissue tests in a couple of spots for, let's call it, 8 to 12 consecutive weeks. So if you do that and you track it, then you can really see, okay, this one time where I was really high or really low, was that an anomaly? Or was I consistently having that happen all throughout the season? Because of plant tissue analysis, it's helped us better fine-tune our fertility program on our farm, and we've helped a lot of farmers really around the world with this whole concept. And there are a lot of high-yield farmers that talk about this. There are a lot of crop consultants that talk about this. I mean, this is really valuable for every farm. So we're going to continue talking about this right after this break. We'll also get to your questions in the Ag PhD mailbag coming up soon here on Ag PhD Radio.
You deserve to have a building that will last for generations. With more than 110 years of experience and thousands of satisfied customers, Morton Buildings is the industry leader you can trust. Unlike other construction companies, you work with Morton Buildings craftsmen from conception to completion. There's no better time to buy. Lock in your new building for 2020 today. Contact your local Morton sales office or visit MortonBuildings.com.
Success isn't just about maintaining your operation, how you make out for the season, or how much you can get from each acre. It's about doing precisely what needs to be done to feed your crop and grow your legacy, all the way down to the last drop. AgroLiquid Precision Crop Nutrition. Apply less, expect more. Find a retailer at agroliquid.com.
The corn we planted early February have all good emergence. So far, we can't find any condition that the wheels haven't worked. I can just say that.
Closing the seed trench behind the planter is essential to establishing yields in the fall. Introducing the Germinator Closing Wheel from Farm Shop MFG. Designed and built by a farmer who is tired of seeing poor stands because of uneven emergence, the Germinator is here to give your crop the strong start it needs for maximum yield. For more information, visit us at farmshopmfg.com.
You need a powerful herbicide to fight the war on weeds.
Vellum is Rotem North America's mesotrion herbicide, and it fights against the annual broadleaf weeds attacking your cornfields. Winning this battle means higher yields, lower cost to you, and maximized profitability. For long-lasting residual weed control, check out Evinco Vilify and our newest mix, Rixa. For application, flexibility, and season-long control, that's Evinco Vilify and Rixa, powered by Vellum. For more information, visit vellumherbicide.com. That's B-E-L-L-U-M herbicide.com.
What do you think of when you hear Palmer amaranth or water hemp? If you use Fierce herbicide in your soybean fields, you don't have to think about them at all. With two effective modes of action and up to 8 weeks of residual control, Fierce takes on even the toughest weeds like water hemp and Palmer amaranth. Take control of your soybean fields and get incentives from Bayer Plus Rewards when you choose the power of Fierce herbicide. Talk to your local retailer today to put Fierce to work in your fields. Always read and follow label directions.
Want to cut production costs without losing yield? Brian Ryberg from Buffalo Lake, Minnesota has done just that. Here's his story.
We began using a Soil Warrior on our farm the fall of 2014. We've seen many benefits from better water infiltration, a lot less hours on equipment, fuel, able to reduce our fertilizer side. So it's really simplified our operation.
See what makes Soil Warrior different and better at SoilWarrior.com.
Welcome back to Ag PhD Radio. Brian Hefty here, along with my brother Darren. We're live in the Morton studio. If you'd like to give us a call, it's 844-44-AG-PHD or send us an email, radio@agphd.com. We'll get to your questions in the Ag PhD mailbag here in just a few minutes, but we want to wrap up on plant tissue analysis. I'll just tell you this story, and if you've been listening to us for years, you've probably heard this before, but when we first started doing plant tissue analysis, and this is 20 plus years ago, we would get to the end of every year, and my dad and Darren and I would talk about, well, boy, why do you think we didn't have higher yields in corn? I don't know. What do you think? I don't know. What do you think? Well, maybe we need more nitrogen. Let's put more nitrogen on. So we'd put more nitrogen on. You know how far that got us? Nowhere. So then, I don't even remember who it was. Somebody told us, you need to start doing plant tissue analysis. So we started that. And, as an agronomist for lots of years and a farmer for a long time, I like to think that, you know, I'm halfway smart. But when we started doing this plant tissue analysis, literally every test came back excessive on nitrogen, completely deficient on potassium, boron, and zinc.
Made it easier to read that way.
Yeah. But week after week, it was this way. And I just thought, my gosh, I must be stupid because I am not even close on what we actually need. So then what we started doing is taking some of our nitrogen dollars, putting them into potassium, boron, and zinc. And what do you think magically happened? Yields went up, which meant since we didn't spend any more money, profits went up. And I go, huh, you know, it's a lot easier to farm when you actually have some data. Now, you're going to get a lot of people that'll say, oh, plant tissue analysis isn't worthwhile. Usually those are the people that take one sample. If you sample every week during the growing season, you will learn something, and it will help you better invest your fertilizer dollars. The other thing that you'll hear people say is, well, you know, they say sufficient. What's that really sufficient for? It's not even as much about that. I mean, yes, in the long term, it would be great to figure out, well, what level do I really need if I want, whatever, 300 bushel corn or 100 bushel beans? That's great. But in the short term, here's what you can figure out, just like I did. When you have stuff that's coming out ridiculously low and other stuff that's coming out ridiculously high, you go, huh, I think I have an answer to what's really happening on my farm. So Darren often will talk about plant tissue analysis is the report card for the farmer. It basically is giving you your report card. How'd you grade out? Did you get an A? Did you get an F? Did you get a C? How'd you grade out on your fertility program and your overall crop management? So I just really strongly encourage you. This is a big key to success on your farm. You might not realize it. You might go, oh, it can't be that big a deal. Trust me, it is. There's no possible chance that I would continue farming if I did not do some plant tissue analysis. And we're not spending a lot of money. We're not pulling a crazy amount of tests, not spending a lot of time at it. It's no big deal. But first thing every Monday morning in the summertime, we are pulling plant tissue samples in a few spots on our farm. And then we can track that over the year, we can track it from year to year, and we can say, oh, I got this issue, or, ooh, it looks like I'm doing really good here, but I need these couple of tweaks. We make those few tweaks and things continue to improve. So I can't say enough good things about plant tissue analysis. Don't let the naysayers keep you away from this valuable and inexpensive tool for your farm. Plant tissue analysis is super important, and you need to do it on your farm just like we're doing it on our farm. Do it for many weeks in a row. Pick the same day and the same time of day every week. Time, by the way, we've done tests on this. Time of day does make a little bit of difference in nutrient levels in the plant. So that's why I say I do it first thing every Monday morning, consistently, all through the summer, preferably 12 weeks in a row. Do that for any crop you have. Do it for every crop you have. At least one or two spots in every crop you have. You will learn something, believe me. All right, let's get to the Ag PhD mailbag.
It's now mailbag time with Brian and Darren.
All right, got a question from Brandon in North Dakota. He said, if you were going to double inoculate soybeans and you were going to put inoculant on the seed, what would you think about using a liquid with the in-furrow application of liquid fertilizer? Would you put a different rate on? Do you think this will work?
You need to use 2 to 3x the rate. So we've been looking at that for 30 years. We've had a lot of people doing it. You have to use at least double, but I would say triple the rate. Now, it's not a big deal. If you're spending a dollar or two, that means your cost is now $3 to $6. So that is one way to go. How we prefer to double inoculate when we do that is we already put liquid on the seed with the fungicide and all our other natural products and insecticide and all that stuff. Then, right at the planter box in the spring, we will put dry on. Now, we've done this going into a drill, going into a planter, actually dumping it in the planter boxes. I mean, there are lots of ways to do that, but we like dry as the second inoculant. If you want to use liquid in furrow, you can. It just costs a little bit more money because you've got to up that rate so much. And the reason why you have to up the rate so much is because you're not going to be in close enough proximity to the seed, and so you just don't get the same benefits unless you bump the rate.
All right, thanks for the question, Brandon. Got a couple of 2,4-D questions coming up. First one's from Wade. He said, I'm getting mixed answers from experts in our area on this topic. So that
sounds
I'd
like
ask
we
you.
Better solve that problem. Go ahead.
He said, okay, a couple things. If we burn down with 2,4-D and plant corn a week later, will it hurt our yield?
Well, here's the reason why you could get a mixed answer on that. It's because nobody knows for sure. So the whole thing is, where I'm going with this is there a chance that the 2,4-D could hurt the corn? Yes, there is. That's why I don't recommend 2,4-D in a burn down in front of corn. I would use dicamba instead. Go ahead.
Okay, next thing. And if we plant soybeans that are not an Enlist E3 bean behind a 2,4-D burn down application, how much yield loss would you expect to get?
Anywhere from 0 to 10 bushels. So, again, it's not worth a chance. We're farmers who are already taking a crazy amount of risk. Why add to the risk? Instead, use something safe. So, plant Enlist beans if you want to use 2,4-D as the burn down, or plant dicamba beans, extend beans, if you want to use dicamba as the burn down, or use something that's going to be safe to all beans. Use like Gramoxone, Roundup, the three pre's we talk about. I mean, throw a whole bunch of fertilizer out. I mean, there are all kinds of ways to burn stuff down without putting your crop at risk. But that's what you're doing when you use 2,4-D. And I realize, and you can argue with me, that, well, the label says if I only use X rate, a pint, I can go in there a week later. Well, I realize that's what the label says. But is anybody going to stand behind it if you have a 2-bushel yield loss or if you lose 10% of your plants? No. Nobody's going to stand behind that. They're not going to come look at it. It's all generic stuff. No way. So why would you take all that risk with no backing? Not a chance in the world I'm doing that.
All right. Thanks for those questions. We appreciate that. I got more 2,4-D questions. These come from Kyle. He said, I'm wondering, is it labeled and legal and even recommended to mix Enlist 1, Liberty, and glyphosate? Although it sounds like Durango DMA would be a better Roundup to work with for compatibility.
Okay, well, he asked three completely separate, well, two completely
well,
separate
here, here's the
labeled
here's the
and legal, that's one thing, and then recommended.
Yeah,
go ahead.
And then here's the rest of it. He said, dealers in my area obviously want a person to do Enlist One in Liberty, but not sure what to do in fields with heavy grass pressure. Clethodim has been decent at best, and they may have some antagonism there, so just wondering if Roundup would be
yes,
a good alternative.
There is antagonism. I can guarantee you that. So, okay, first of all, let's answer the original question. Liberty plus Roundup plus Enlist, is it labeled and legal? Yes, it is. Is it recommended? No. The reason why is, why would you want to do it? Why do you want to spend all that money? If you want grass control, Liberty's great on grass.
If you need to spray Liberty for the broadleaves, it's going to do a decent job on grass, too, as long as you run at least 32 ounces.
Yeah, I mean, how many dollars are you trying to spend here? I mean, cut your costs. What I do is use a good pre. You can go out there with trifluralin for $4 an acre, you know, and get 99% of your grass killed for the entire season. So spend less. Use a pre. That's what I would do. And here's the next thing. Okay, let's say I am going to go Liberty together with Enlist. Then I'm going to make absolutely sure that the Liberty's at the full rate. We ran a bunch of reduced rate stuff last year, and all I can tell you is it's not labeled to cut the rate of either. But if I was going to cut the rate of one, it would be the 2,4-D way before the Liberty. Keep the Liberty rate up. I got more to talk about with this particular question right after this, and we are going to get to more of your questions in the Ag PhD mailbag coming up next here on Ag PhD Radio.
High-yield corn growers know that feeding the crop and soil are keys to maximizing yield potential. Nutec's EDA and Reverb are specifically formulated to help manage limiting factors associated with today's farming conditions. Nutec's EDA works within the plant to support nutrient mobility and utilization. Reverb focuses on the soil, providing beneficial trace elements which help condition the root zone for optimal microbial activity. Low use rates and superb tank mix compatibility make Nutec's EDA and Reverb no-brainers in the high-yield grower toolbox.
What do you think of when you hear Palmer amaranth or water hemp? If you use Fierce herbicide in your soybean fields, you don't have to think about them at all. With two effective modes of action and up to 8 weeks of residual control, Fierce takes on even the toughest weeds like water hemp and Palmer amaranth. Take control of your soybean fields and get incentives from Bayer Plus Rewards when you choose the power of Fierce herbicide. Talk to your local retailer today to put Fierce to work in your fields. Always read and follow label directions.
Hey Adam, new drone?
Not just any drone.
I mounted a laser on it to take out weeds.
Look out for that tree! In the power lines!
Oh, it's in for the house.
There's a simpler way to protect spring wheat from weeds. Perfect Match Herbicide. The broadest spectrum weed and grass control in one product. Learn more at PerfectMatchHerbicide.com. Always read and follow label directions.
The laser.
When it comes to my weed control, I know a head start can go a long way. That's why I spray early, so I can keep control all season long with a Roundup Ready Extend crop system, the system that makes the difference. This is my field.
Choose the Roundup Ready Extend crop system for control of more weeds than any other soybean system. Featuring Extendamax herbicide with vapor grip technology to manage tough-to-control weeds, including up to 14 days of soil activity, along with the field-proven performance of Roundup Ready to Extend soybeans. Now you have the right tools to extend your weed control and extend your yield with the system that makes the difference. Learn how you can put the system to work in your field when you visit RoundupReadyExtend.com. Extendamax is a restricted-use pesticide. Performance may vary. Always read and follow grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions. Check local regulations for specific requirements in your state.
Revitec fungicide from BASF has been specifically developed for the selective soybean grower who doesn't compromise. If you think good is good enough, if you're okay with just achieving rather than overachieving, if average is your goal, this is not the fungicide for you. Revitec fungicide, brand new chemistry, three no-excuse modes of action, zero modes of compromise. Sounds like the fungicide for you. Revitec fungicide from BASF, that's smart. Always read and follow label directions.
Thanks for listening today to Ag PhD Radio. Got a little bit of time left here in the show. If you want to call in, 844-44-AG-PHD. Right before the break, we were talking about this three-way mix of Liberty, Roundup, and Enlist. And is it labeled and legal? Yes. Would I recommend it? I can't see a situation where I would ever recommend it, but maybe I would. I mean, I don't know who's going to want to spend that kind of money. Why are you going to want to spend $20 an acre and you have virtually no residual? That's not going to get you very far. So why not split it up? If you're all worried about grass, that should be your first concern always. You got to get grass under control, because a lot of times we see millions of grass plants in a field. Just go out there with straight Roundup and eliminate that problem. Here's the other thing you got to think about. With Roundup and Enlist, both of those, you have to be a little bit concerned about spray drift. I'm not saying you have to be super worried about volatility like you do with dicamba or anything, but you do have to be a little worried about drift. So in other words, you want a little bit coarser spray nozzle, bigger droplets. With Liberty, you want the exact opposite. You want a very small spray droplet with fantastic coverage, high gallonage, more spray pressure, just the opposite of what we're looking for with Roundup and Enlist. So to make Liberty work the best and get the best bang for your buck, because that's what we're all about here. We want to make sure that you get everything under control in your field for as little money as possible, and then you're happy because you have fantastic yields. Well, I'm just telling you, I don't think you're going to be very happy when you put Liberty, Roundup, and Enlist all together. You need to make a separate application, and I would really encourage you, put a pre down. If you're all worried about grass, get trifluralin out there for $4 an acre. Pre, you solved your grass problem. That takes that out of the equation entirely, and now you're left with the Liberty and the Enlist, basically. Here's the next thing. With Enlist, it does not, that's 2,4-D. Okay, that's the new 2,4-D choline that we see almost no volatilization, very little drift issue. So it's fantastic. Great herbicide, one of the best new herbicides to come out. It's just light years better than 2,4-D, old 2,4-D. But anyway, 2,4-D has very little activity on grass. It does actually, believe it or not, have a little bit of activity. But that's where the Roundup does come in pretty handy. And yes, you can throw clethodim in. Let's say you had volunteer corn that is Roundup tolerant. Well, then you might as well go with like Fusilade or Secure or something like that. Clethodim is very weak on volunteer corn. So I'm not going to recommend that you throw clethodim in that case. I would go with a different product. But anyway, the point is any of those grass killers, Clethodim, Secure, or Fusilade, you're going to have some antagonism when you put those in together with 2,4-D or Enlist. So that means you need to bump up the rate of any of those products to get them to work the same. Okay, we see this same kind of thing when we mix grass and broadleaf herbicides together in wheat or really in any crop. So be a little bit cautious about that. I guess I'm super excited about the Enlist beans because now we have three great options post-emerge, Liberty, Roundup, and Enlist, in addition to all the standard soybean herbicides we have. But yeah, there's no way that, for me, I'm going to throw them all together.
All right. Thanks for that question. Believe it or not, Brian, one more 2,4-D question. This one is from Joe in Minnesota, South Central Minnesota. He said, how early can I get out and spray 2,4-D on ditch banks and field borders? I've got some pasture I need to get whipped back into shape. Hasn't been pastured in 5 to 10 years. I've got some buck brush out there as well. Is there anything I could use for the buck brush without hurting some oak trees that I have nearby that I don't want to?
How many other things are we going to throw in here?
So how early is too early to spray 2,4-D?
Okay. So first of all, 2,4-D, just like Roundup and a lot of other herbicides, they're contact killers in that you're not going to see a crazy amount of residual control come out of them. So we need to have active growth on those weeds. So as soon as your weeds are actively growing, you can go ahead and spray 2,4-D. Personally, I would like to see the nighttime temps above 50 degrees a couple days before and a couple days after spraying. That's usually when we see better results. And also, I'd make sure you don't skimp on the rate. Keep the rate up there, highest labeled rate I'd be using. And then if you've got buck brush, throw in a quart of crop oil also. Now, because it's early in the spring and the leaf cuticles are not real thick yet on your grass, you are probably going to see some burn on your grass. Don't be alarmed. That just tells you, hey, you did the right thing for rate. The grass will be fine out in your ditches. I'm not too worried about that. And in terms of oak trees, if you can spray before you see a bunch of leaves out there, you've got a much better shot at not having any issue with the oak trees. Oh, I guess I do have one last thing. I hate old 2,4-D in terms of volatility. New 2,4-D, if you could find any of the new Freelix, that's really the way to go.
Yep, and you can get it in some of the premixes too, 2,4-D choline, so look for that. All right, got an email here from Pat in southeastern North Carolina. He said, I've got low cation exchange capacity soils ranging from 3 to 8, and I do a lot of fertigation through my center pivots. As you know, we often struggle in these low CECs with potash, magnesium, and sulfur, not only in corn, but also in soybean. So I was wondering, K-Mag has all three of those nutrients. It's pretty water-soluble. Could I use those in a fertigation situation?
We don't believe so. I don't think you can put K-Mag in and keep it in suspension and then pump it out through a pivot. So, no, I don't think that's probably the way to go.
Okay, thanks for the question, though. I got a couple of pieces of feedback. We were talking about spraying pre-emerge herbicides on frozen ground. Chris said, we're spraying 12 gallons of 28 with our pre. Hopefully, we're going to plant in about 5 to 7 days. Works great for us. Megan says, I'm not from the U.S., but I wouldn't even consider doing that in our country. If the ground's frozen, you're not going to get weeds that are emerged, and you may get more runoff once things thaw. I was really surprised that farmers in the U.S. were doing that.
Okay, so here are my two arguments against that. First of all, I don't want to kill emerged weeds. Emerged weeds means I've already lost yield. They've robbed nutrients, they've robbed water from me, and I don't want them to rob anything. That's the whole point. We want to get out there before the weeds come up. So that's the first thing. The second thing is spraying in frozen ground. Let's keep in mind, it's not permanently frozen. It's not even frozen for a day. It's thawing in the afternoons. It's just firm enough so you can be out there in the morning. So just as an example, this morning, our guys were out spraying. Okay, it was 26 degrees, whatever it was. And it was already starting to get a little greasy by noon. Well, in the afternoon, it's going to be 40-something degrees. Then the next couple days, we're going to see probably 65, 70. We don't have any rain in the forecast. So what does that tell you? That's basically the same thing as spraying on ground that is fully thawed out, because it is fully thawed out. It just was firm in the morning so we could get across it and not make a mess. That's the whole point. So we look for those days in March and early April in our region. When we get those, it is fantastic. It's absolutely the right thing to do for the environment and for the farmer, for weed control, for everybody. Here's the other thing. I love it when it's going to snow instead of rain. And we did have that here over the last couple of weeks. Instead of getting rain, we'd get, you know, a little bit of overnight precip. Not much. We're talking like 2/10 total. Well, instead of it being rain, it was snow. Well, when it's snow, then it soaks in even better and easier, and I have no runoff. So, yeah, it's a fantastic time to do it. Obviously, you got to use your head a little bit. If it was going to rain 6 inches tomorrow and I'm truly on frozen ground, well, yeah, then I'd be stupid for putting it out there. But we aren't dealing with any of those kind of situations.
Thanks for the question. Get one here from Ron in Australia. He said, could you please give your thoughts on what's going on with these corn cobs? I've got a Pioneer variety, which can have some tip back, but never this much. And just so you know, you're listening on radio, of course, we're looking at ears where maybe pollinated a couple, 2-3 inches from the bottom of the ear. The rest of the cob is blank. And he said a couple things here. We've had a pretty good growing season, but we had high hopes for a good silage yield. We don't think it's a bug damage, heavy wind or rain at pollination or anything like that. We think it's more the lines of silk knotting. The husk cover is tight, and the silk doesn't seem to be able to exit.
Yep, exactly. So the first time I saw this, I was a young agronomist. This was over 25 years ago in the state of South Dakota. And it actually, it's the same company. Now, I'm not going to blame the company or anything, but it happened to be Pioneer. They had this one variety that was fantastic, and it was winning trials like 3 years in a row. Then people planted it, lost 50 bushels of yield because they had silk balling. All the silks didn't come out of the end. That husk was so tight, it didn't let the silks come out. That's what you're dealing with, and this is one of the reasons why we always encourage everybody plant lots of varieties on your farm, because you never know what variety is susceptible to this or not, and and it's hopefully just a fluke deal, and next year you never see it again.
Yep, just search for silk balling online. You'll find a lot of different images, and nobody has a great explanation, but oftentimes it could be a stress like drought or heat or cold or something like that right during silking. Thanks for listening to our show today. Be sure to join us again each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio.